Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today is opera star Leona Mitchell. The Enid, Oklahoma native and Oklahoma State cultural ambassador is a Grammy Award-winning soprano who sang with the Metropolitan Opera in leading roles for over 18 years. Mitchell grew up in Enid, the 10th of 15 children, and went to Oklahoma City University where she studied with the renowned vocal coach Inez Silberg. Later, she attended Juilliard School and made her operatic debut at San Francisco Opera at the age of 23. Just a year later, she made her debut at the Metropolitan. The same year, she sang the role of Bess in the first full-length recording of Porgy and Bess, which won her a Grammy Award. From there, she never looked back, singing regularly each season at the Metropolitan and the world's leading opera houses, Paris, London, Vienna, Sydney, Buenos Aires, even Giza in Egypt, where she sang the title role in Verdi's Aida. She appeared with Tulsa Opera on a number of occasions as well, including an Aida production performed on a sandy beach on the Performing Arts Center stage. She'll be the featured guest at a Focus Black Oklahoma informational fundraiser this Thursday evening at Gilcrease Museum. The event will help raise funds for this new public radio program, which debuted last week here on Public Radio Tulsa, which is a collaboration between Public Radio Tulsa, the Tulsa Artists Fellowship, and Tri-City Collective. If you'd like more information on the program or the fundraiser, visit tricitycollective.com/FBO. Leona Mitchell is my guest today. Leona Mitchell, welcome to Studio Tulsa. It's long overdue, but I'm so happy to have you on our program today.
Thank you so much.
I know one of the formative experiences in my own musical life was hearing you sing here in Tulsa a number of years ago in Aida, but let's start at the beginning. As a daughter of a minister and a church pianist, I would imagine music was a part of your life from a pretty early age.
You cannot even imagine. It was such a huge part of our lives. You know, my mom, and it was a small church, so the family, I'm one of 15, so we were practically the choir and everything. 10 brothers and 4 sisters. And so we were, you know, very much involved in the church and being in the choir and all of that. And then my elder brothers and sisters actually were a gospel group that sang locally and in Texas and Kansas. They were called the Musical Mitchells. So as I was a little wee one, they were already, you know, out performing. So, yeah, it was a big part of my life.
What are your memories of learning to sing, or was it just a matter of singing?
Yeah, because you had those older ones that were, as a matter of fact, there's one great story that I was told, and I didn't know about it later, but I was very small, and so they practiced. And I came in, and I guess I was trying to sing with them, and then my eldest brother said, "You can't sing." And he said that he thinks that started a seed in me. I was going to show everybody. He said, I was just devastated. I was just crying. I wanted to sing so badly. But I didn't even remember that that had happened, but he did.
Growing up in Enid, was opera a part of your growing up at all?
Oh, have mercy, no. So that's why I was talking about the influence of gospel music and things like that in my church. But no, this teacher actually guided me to opera in high school, even that late. She wanted to be an opera singer and was not allowed or whatever. And so she heard the potential in my voice, and so she directed me. She said, "Have you ever heard opera?" And I think at that point, this was like the late 60s. I was in high school. And Leontine Price, the first black prima donna of, you know, the repertoire that I sing now, mm-hmm. had made her debut in 63, I think, or something like that. So she was just guiding me, you know, and had me listen to her and some of the other greats. And that was my first introduction to it. And let me tell you what I thought when I heard this opera. I thought, oh, my God, people can sing that high, and that's wonderful. I love this. And I was intrigued by it, actually, intellectually, because of the language. Yeah. And I was into languages. And so Enid's school system was wonderful. I had taken 3 years of Spanish, and I was into my second year of French or something. So I loved languages. So that intrigued me about opera. This was amazing. It was a whole new world for me.
So you took to it pretty early. I would think growing up in the mid to late 60s, popular music is everywhere. I would think maybe that would be the focus at some point.
Oh, yeah. But what intrigued me was the the how technically an opera singer could sing like that. And that was so opposite than what, you know, the pop music and gospel. And so, and then it really, when I saw they put on costumes and acted, I was just gone. I thought it was wonderful.
So you went to OCU. You studied with one of the, I guess,
great teachers at the time. Her name was Inez Silberg,
yeah.
And that lady from Enid, that teacher, actually physically drove me to the audition. So, because she was trying to guide me. I was not too sure that I wanted to have a career in music. I liked it. But I wanted to be an ambassador to the United States in government. I was good in history and things like that.
Interesting.
But she said, just do this for me. So I went and I sang, because she had taught me this aria from guess which opera, Aida. I didn't know I would be singing that later on in life, but she had me singing some of that in the high school program. Mm-hmm. And so I went and auditioned for that and got a full scholarship.
So a lot of great singers came out from Inez Silberg. What was it she instilled in you? She was an amazing teacher. She probably didn't get the due she needed to outside of music in Oklahoma, but she was, you know, in many ways a great ambassador, because she produced so many incredible singers from OCU.
Oh, yes. She just was. She was a very much of a disciplinarian and took it very seriously.
Old school then.
Yeah, and so we grew up with a lot of structure, you know, at the side of opera and being prepared. And this is her gift to all of us, you know. And a lot of people are talented, but it's getting it to go the next step, getting to go to the next step. And she was just very significant in that development with young people.
What has stayed with you from her all this time?
Well, you know, when we were even young, when we went to national contests, they knew we were Inez Silberg singers because we had a stage deportment about us. She would groom us like that. And that's amazing. And this carried on for the rest of my life. Matter of fact, when I made my Met debut, which was really young, I was 24, I was standing next to the great tenor, Plácido Domingo, whom I had never met. And I was being put on a stage that I had no rehearsal in on the stage and hadn't heard the orchestra anything. But what went with me is what Inez Silberg taught me about being prepared and doing senior job through. Plácido Domingo said to me, "Aren't you afraid?" And I said, no, I can't be afraid. I have to go do this. She really put that in us. It was through a lot of hard work and discipline that she trained us. And I could actually make my Met debut without having gone through any rehearsal on that stage.
Well, you did make your professional debut at a pretty high level, the San Francisco Opera, which is, at that time, that was probably the second or third company in the United States.
Exactly. But I got to go through a program there. I'd won a national contest. So I was there for 6 weeks as they train young singers and dance and all kind of manners of things and coaching with voice, and they actually let you do an opera. And so I did several there. And I learned one opera. I had gotten ill because they drove you so hard on doing everything every day. We were so exhausted. But I was learning the opera Don Giovanni. And so I got ill. My voice got ill, and I had to be put on rest. Well, they didn't expect me to learn the opera. We only had like 2 weeks or something to get it together and coach with people on it. Well, I taught myself this opera. And so Kurt Herbert Adler, who was the general director, he could not believe that I knew that opera like that and that I learned that. And so he gave me the conductor's award as I was in that program, because he couldn't believe that I had really learned that like that by myself.
Well, you made your debut as Micaela in Carmen. That's the same role you did at the Met just less than 2 years later. How did the Met debut come about?
Well, I had one of the directors that had been in San Francisco Opera that was, one of the, I can't think of the title of it now, but he hired singers. So he had been moved to the Metropolitan Opera. And he, one singer from Europe that was getting good reviews and things was to make her debut there, and she got ill. So instead of going through all the tried and true Micaelas that had been all over the world, this guy said, I know Leona can do this. Just let her come in and she can do it. And so that's how that happened. And God was with me and the stars and everything, because it was a great success. In spite of the daunting, no rehearsal and everything and things and never seeing the stage, it just God was on my side.
I'm wondering, do you remember anything about that debut at the Met?
I remember everything about it.
Uh-huh.
That tenacity to go through and stick through and do the training from OCU got me through that, and just understanding that I needed to do a good job. I didn't know what was at stake, though. I didn't know, because it's too young, I didn't know that if you didn't do well, you weren't going to probably be asked back there ever. I didn't know that, because I saw a lot of people go in and out of the Met. I was there for 18 seasons.
Well, then the very next year, you're making, I would assume, maybe your first recording, and that recording wins the Grammy Award.
It's
the first.
Right. I didn't know you really studied up on
Well. That's my job.
Yes, right.
So you...
And listen, I was just in such a run then, and my management, they didn't even, because I didn't go to the Grammys. They just, you know, at that time, they just gave the classical Grammys. They were a note saying that you won it. So I didn't even understand how wonderful that was. I didn't know, because I was so young, I didn't understand the scheme of things.
No, it's hard to...
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's hard to
believe. Remarkable, but that was the first complete recording of Porgy and Bess, so that was very significant.
I was going to say that was really remarkable that it took 1976 for people to finally record the full Porgy and Bess by George Gershwin.
Because Leontine and those had done excerpts, but this was the first full record. And let me tell you what happened about that. Now talking about divine intervention, I was to do, because I was 24, 25, I was supposed to do the Clara part, which sings Summertime, not Bess, because they were going to have an interesting recording. They were going to do a black and white cast. They were going to do with Martina Arroyo as Bess, and then I think it was Robert Merrill was going to be, you know, they were going to have a fun kind of thing about it. And then that all got scrapped, and because I had been doing Porgy and Bess all over, you know, L.A. and Detroit and Atlanta, they asked me to come do Bess. I was shocked. And so that just came about. I was not supposed to be that way.
Well, I would love for people to hear you in full voice. This is one of your signature roles. I know that you did many times Puccini from Johnny Schicchi. This is the great aria that everyone knows, even though if they don't know the name of it. It's O Mio.
O Mio Babbino Caro.
Yes. With Mr. Adler one of your recordings. Here is Leona Mitchell here on Studio Tulsa. That is my guest today, Leona Mitchell, Oklahoma native, opera singer, Oklahoma State cultural ambassador, and our guest today on Studio Tulsa. She will be the featured guest for the Focus Black Oklahoma informational fundraiser at Gilcrease Museum this Thursday evening. Focus Black Oklahoma is a new program on Public Radio Tulsa in collaboration with the Tulsa Artists Fellowship and the Tri-City Collective. And she will be the special guest for that event this Thursday. And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Leona, I have to ask you, you have this rare opportunity of being up close to all three tenors. Those are all recorded performances. Placido Domingo, Jose Carreras, and Luciano Pavarotti in three different productions over the years. You know, I know you're worried about singing your own part, but what are your memories of these three amazing tenors that have sort of transcended music?
Oh, gosh, just so many memories. I did so many different things with each of them throughout, you know, my career. So let's start with Placido because I made my debut. That was so significant. And then we just did things, you know, all over the world, different operas in Ireland, I don't know, London and different places, Covent Garden. And Placido was always, he's another person that was so driven and always beyond prepared. And I noted that even in rehearsals, he never used his full voice. He saved his voice for the performance. So he would sing all low and then all the high notes low. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. That's good to learn, to not give it all out in the rehearsal. So for me, that was him. And he was always such a wonderful-looking man. And to actually have somebody look the part and be like that was also a thrill to be with him and perform. Jose Carreras was, Jose got really sick in the middle of his career.
Right, he had leukemia.
But I was privileged to do some things with Jose. He was such a gentleman and such a nice, nice person. And with this big, giant voice, he wasn't as tall as Placido and Luciano, but he was a very good-looking man and just such a great colleague. I just love Jose. And actually, we did, when he came from under that illness, the first thing that he did, we did a concert together in Italy, a recital together. And I just love Jose. He just was just the kindest person. Now, Luciano, he was bigger than life, right? Totally. And we did lots together, a lot of operas. And we even did a film together, Yes, Giorgio. And so we share the same publicity agent. And so I have many memories of Luciano. I remember we did a Turandot in San Francisco, and he was just getting bigger than life. You know, he's running around there with his Rolls Royce. And then he was a little perturbed. I'm telling this to the world because this is not known. But he was perturbed with me because I was just starting out. And then my manager from New York and my coach from L.A. came, of course. And then we were having a private dinner where Luciano was having this big party. He got so upset. He says, why are you not coming to my party? And I'm like, I didn't mean to make you upset. I just didn't even try to encroach upon you. I was just going with my man. But he was very sensitive, Luciano. I'm laughing because he really was. He was this big old guy like a bear. And he was really in my corner. He used to give me, when we were making the movies and stuff, we'd have private talks. Or sometime at the opera, he'd come in and just talk to me beforehand about. He just thought I was really talented. And he would just give me little private thoughts. So I have a lot of memories of these guys.
I mean, that's one thing about being at the Met for 18 seasons. You saw all sorts of singers coming through. What is it like to work on that stage? It's such a symbolic stage in America.
Oh, yes. Let me give this one story. My teacher, Maureen Preedy from Enid, who started it all. When she came, she didn't like to fly, so she didn't come to a lot of things. But when she finally came to the Met, and she sat there, and when you say it's awesome and it's historic, when she saw those gorgeous chandeliers going up, they go up to the ceiling as the opera began. She said she had tears all night just to think that this little girl that she would pick up before school to teach me the opera, that I had scaled all the way to the top. It just, she said she could barely listen to the opera, just the thought of it. It was just awesome, the history and everything. You know, she cried the whole night just thinking about it, you know, how that had evolved. But, yeah, that stage for me, you know, was home for me. I grew up there. I started with lyric music and went on to the dramatic soprano music. So I grew up before people's eyes at the Met, which is not normally done. You usually go there and you're settled in your repertory and then you essay it. People, that's the way they've always done it. I think other than Roberta Peters may have been one that kind of grew up there because she was like 19 years old. I don't think anybody's ever been that young.
Yeah.
But I grew up in everybody's face, and I love the house. And the acoustics there are, to me, some of the best in the world.
Yeah, as we were speaking, I remember when you came to Tulsa to do, and I think you told me before we started, this was your only Aida, which I think of you as Verdi and Puccini roles, although you did others as well, but mm-hmm. especially in Verdi. And that was the only Aida you ever did, the one here in Tulsa?
Oh, no. It was the only one with the sand in it.
Oh, the sand.
Oh, no. I did it over 200 times.
Yeah, I would think so.
World.
I would think so.
Okay. Aida was known for that.
Yeah, no. I want to talk about your appearance in Tulsa. And I don't know how many times you came to Tulsa with the opera company, but I remember
several
that.
Times. Yeah.
Yeah, the mm-hmm. Verdi Aida, which, of course, the whole stage was filled with sand. I refer to it as Aida on the beach. And, you know, I was on that stage and just to walk across it.
It was just outrageous. And, the violinist, everybody was upset because little pieces of sand would go down
into the pit.
It was not something that one should have done. It sounded like a wonderful idea. Now, you know what that would have been good for, like a TV or a DVD movie. That way you can control where the orchestra was. But this was not good. It was really frustrating to the orchestra. I remember it was a lot of concern about all of that sand getting in the instrument.
Well, I know as a member of the banda, I was actually mm-hmm. underneath the stage,
right.
And we would play up. And when anybody moved on stage, you would see this just little trickle of sand coming through the stage.
Right.
But what was memorable to me was hearing you sing towards the end of the first act, Ritorno Vincitore. Yeah, and just I never heard, that stunning note at the end. It was something I never heard before, and it was an amazing, amazing moment. It stayed with me all these years.
Thank you for that. Because one, in the midst of learning music and performing it, you really want to have touched someone soul if they've come. And so this means a lot to me that you said that. Oh my goodness, how wonderful. Yeah, it's a melancholy note that Aida sings at the very end, and usually when I would sing it, I'd walk off singing this long pianissimo note that I would hope would catch people's imagination because she's melancholy and so I'm glad to hear that.
Are you a teacher these days? Do you actually teach young people?
I'm not a teacher, but I go and do master classes at the universities and things, and I love that because the young people are just like sponges, and it's so wonderful to be able to help maybe impart something that they can use from my singing and that will help them. And so I adore doing that. I've done it all over the country, and I actually really love it. And sometimes I've even done it with the Tulsa Opera. I will go with their apprentice programs and work with them several times through the year. So that's what I love to do.
Do you try to subscribe to those things that Inez Silberg taught you at OCU as far as preparation?
Of course. I am the embodiment of that. proudly. Of course I do. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so you would try to give that to the next person. It's really important that, singers can try to do that through master class.
Now, you've returned to Enid, is that correct?
Yes, I came back when my mom and dad, my dad had just passed and my mom was ill. And I came and saw her through her transition. And then my husband transitioned 6 years ago. And so I'm still in Oklahoma, but it's comfortable for me here. Since I've slowed down and things, it's important, that I rest, and I've been living on bi-coastal and all over the world, so it's quieter for me in Oklahoma, and I can get where I need to go, through the airports and when I need to go somewhere. So I just have decided I like just being in this little Enid. I like it. It's quiet.
What was it like coming back after all those years? I mean, Enid has to have changed a lot, and
it's
perhaps
changed, but it's retained. It's always been a town that is good to raise children in the school system, And so in that way, it's still the same. People like bringing their children here and raising them. It's pretty much quieter than some places. Of course, everybody has things that are different now, you know. But basically, I love, it's still a sense of community. And then it's wonderful to me because having lived in New York and L.A. and all these places, I can just get to where I have to go in very little time. And, you know, and it's so comfortable. People know me. It's lovely.
Earlier, you said you wanted to be a diplomat when you were younger. And, of course, now you were all over the world. But a lot of times when a musician is working all over the world, you really don't get to see too much of it other than the opera house and the hotel.
Yeah, but my husband had been a school teacher, and so I was so thrilled. It was hard at the time, but he made sure, especially when I had our son, but we went always to the museums, and he would stretch me, and we'd go see everything. You know, the Mona Lisa, I mean, we went everywhere. And at the, you know, so I wasn't like Leontine said, she had to go back to Europe and go to all the places. But with my husband, we went everywhere. Wherever we went, we all went to the historical things and the Vatican. We went on tours. We did all of that. So I had a well-rounded, fantastic life. You cannot imagine.
Now you've sung
marvelous things.
You've sung on many of the opera's greatest stages. From South America, all throughout Europe, America, Asia, the Far East.
Yeah, almost all the continents, yeah.
What stage was particularly memorable for making a debut, other than the Met, obviously?
Other than the Met, it was obviously. I was drawn, actually, I loved South America because they called it Little Italy. And in Buenos Aires, when I did my debut there, a Callas and those people used to take boats over there, you know, weeks and stuff. But everybody that was of notoriety went there, you know, to this house in Buenos Aires.
Is that the Teatro Colón?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And so I loved it, and I loved the acoustics there. But I tell you, and I love Covent Garden, you know. But you know what was significant to me? After I'd done so many hundreds of Aidas, I was invited to one of the tours in Egypt and the Giza pyramid. And the opera took place in all of the pyramids, and we were outdoors, and oh my God, I thought I was gonna die. It was so fabulous. We were walking. I said I felt like I was Aida. It was just so exciting to be under the stars and actually singing this music, which, you know, had been written about in Egypt. And I thought I'd died and gone to heaven. It was spectacular.
It's been a great pleasure to speak with you. You have been a great ambassador for the state and an amazing, amazing singer. And it's such a pleasure to speak with you. Leona Mitchell,
thanks for joining us. Thank you so much.
Opera star and Oklahoma cultural ambassador Leona Mitchell speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. She'll be the featured guest for the Focus Black Oklahoma fundraiser, which will raise funds for the new public radio program, which is a collaboration between Public Radio Tulsa, Tulsa Artists Fellowship, and Tri-City Collective, which is executive produced by Studio Tulsa's producer Scott Gregory and Quraysh Ali Lansana. For more information on the program or the fundraiser, visit tricitycollective.com/FBO. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.